The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org. Well, we couldn't think of a better way to wrap up National Library Week than to invite America's best-known librarian to the Free Library Festival. By now, you probably know the story of a freezing morning in 1988 when Spencer Public Library Director Vicki Myron discovered a tiny, rumpled kitten abandoned in the library's night drop box, something that has also happened here in the past. She adopted the cat and named him Dewey Readmore Books, and for 19 years, Dewey lived at the library and grew into a strutting, affable cat that brought smiles to patrons' faces. A number one New York Times bestseller, Dewey, the small-town library cat who touched the world, is Myron's memoir of her loyal feline companion and how he became a beacon of hope for the struggling small town of Spencer, Iowa. Please welcome Vicki Myron.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. Thank you for stopping this afternoon and taking time to visit with me. I'm used to a little less formal setting and sitting down and talking to people, so this is a little strange standing at a podium, but we'll get through it. How many of you have read the book already? Oh, good. A lot of people. That makes me figure out what I'm going to talk about a little better if I know that people have already read the book. Hopefully you know the story and enjoyed it already. For those of you that don't, I think Andy told you a little bit about the beginning of the story. But for those of you who are super cat lovers and just became because you saw a cat on the cover, I do have to warn you that the book is a lot more than a cat book. There's a lot of other things in there besides Dewey the cat. Although he was amazing and magical, I've also put a lot of my life into the book and a lot of the story of Spencer, Iowa, the town that I spent most of my life in, at least my career as a librarian in. I was librarian at Spencer Public Library for 25 and a half years and always thought I would retire, and instead I'm rewired, as all of my friends say, because I have a new career now. I'm on the road with this book and having a wonderful time, but getting a little tired of waking up in a different hotel room every day and wondering what city I'm in. We published the book last September, and I'm happy to say that we're still in the top 10 of the New York Times bestseller list after 8 months. The book is doing very well. What you may not know is that the book was also sold in 27 countries. So Dewey is coming out in a lot of languages, which has been very exciting. I can't read any of them, but I'm enjoying looking at all the different covers that different publishers have come up with and trying to figure out at least a couple of words in each of the books. We just got the High Chinese version the other day, and that's interesting. I think my one that I'm looking forward to the most is Dewey came out in Hebrew, but he's also coming out in Sanskrit. And I think that's hysterically funny that Dewey's story is coming out in the most ancient language in the world, and I can't wait to see the Sanskrit version, although, of course, I still won't be able to read any of it. But it's been amazing looking at all of these different covers and all of the books that are coming out. I thought I'd talk a little bit about the process of writing the book, because that was new for me. I'm a first-time author. And being a librarian, it's kind of like being on the other side of the fence for a little while. I bought books all my life and talked to publishers all my life, but had never been through the process on this side of the fence. So it was very interesting. First of all, for all those people who ask me, how do I get published? I have no idea. I was very lucky. After Dewey passed away, he was extremely famous by that time. His obituary appeared in 277 newspapers. He was on CBS Afternoon Break and MSNBC. The news flashed around the world in about 5 hours that I heard from Japan. And so three agents actually contacted me and wanted me to write this book. Two of them actually wanted quick, cute little cat books that would just commercialize on Dewey's death, and I didn't want that. I knew we had a real story to tell. Luckily, the third agent who contacted me also believed that there was a real story to tell. And so he was very interested in doing a book, and I wrote him back and said, I'm a librarian. I work 40 hours a week plus. I teach a lot. I don't have time to write a book, but if you find me a ghost author, maybe I'd be interested. And I was kind of kidding. But he got back to me the next day and said, I have three ghost authors that you can interview. So I called each of them, and luckily the third one that I talked to, his name was Brett Witter. He's out of Louisville, Kentucky, and he's the same age as my daughter. So I didn't know how that was going to work, but once we spoke on the phone, we hit it off immediately. And he wrote a couple of paragraphs based on what we discussed, and I was amazed that he had captured my voice so quickly. So he was a joy to work with. I do have to tell you, though, that when he got the call from my agent that this project might be coming up, he had never read the book. He'd never heard of Dewey. And he said to my agent, he said, okay, let me get this straight. You want me to go to Iowa and talk to a librarian about a cat that's dead? And he wasn't too enthused over the project, but after we spoke the first time, then he realized what the real story was, and he got on board very quickly. But anyway, we started the book actually writing in February of 2007. Dewey died the end of November in 2006, and it took us 8 months of actual writing. He came to Spencer three times to visit and get to know the town and get to know me better. But we spent every evening on the phone together for hours, weekends, because I was writing this while I was still working. So we spent a lot of time on the computer and on the phone and doing research. And I had to come up with 19 years worth of memories that I had kind of put away. And so he picked my brain for 8 months. We actually wrote five versions of the book, and the last one was accepted 8 months later. And apparently for two writers who have never worked together before, that's extremely quick. I didn't know that at the time, but that's what my publishers have said. The process was wonderful while we were writing. It was very exciting. After the writing, you'd think the majority of the work is done, and that's not true. That's when the work actually begins. With the publicity and writing blurbs for magazines and newspapers and doing all the advertising and picking the cover and deciding on the font and the color of the book and the size of the type, you're very busy for a very long time. My best friend always said that writing this book was like birthing a baby because it was so much labor. And I ended up telling her, no, it was more like birthing a baby elephant because it was 22 months from beginning to end, from the time that we started writing it until the day that it was published last September. So it's quite a process. I have eight lawyers now. Never thought that I would have eight lawyers, but they're scattered all over the country. I have copyright attorneys and trademark attorneys. I have entertainment attorneys. I have movie attorneys. In case you haven't heard, the book will be made into a film. New Line Cinema has purchased the rights to the movie. And I'm very proud to say that Meryl Streep will be playing me. Thank you. That was one of the most exciting things that happened. We'd been talking with the movie company since before the book was written. There were a number of book companies that were interested, as well as movie companies that were interested before the book was even written. And they were tossing around names early on, and I just kind of kiddingly said, well, you know, Meryl Streep would be great. Didn't really think that would happen. But the funny thing was, my agent called me 5 minutes before I went on stage at the Mall of America in front of about 400 to 500 people. And he said, you cannot tell anyone. because it could ruin the movie deal. So I'm out on stage, I'm jumping up and down inside, and everyone in the audience is saying, do you know who's going to play you in the movie? And I had to go, oh, I don't know. So I had to keep that secret for about a month before we signed all the papers and got it squared away. But that will be very exciting. Pam Gray has been hired to write the script. We've been working with her for about a year and a half. She's done other movies with Meryl Streep. She did Music of the Heart with Meryl Streep and the new Hilary Swank movie that's coming out. She wrote that also. So she's coming to Spencer on May 4th to follow me around for a couple of weeks and get the script written properly. That way, if we had an independent scriptwriter, we didn't really care which studio got the film because we know that we'll have the right script. That way we'll have a little control over the story. So that will be fun. Meryl Streep is very excited about coming back to Iowa. Of course, she did Bridges of Madison County there. And so we'll be very pleased to have her in Spencer. I don't know when the film will come out. They have an 18-month option to get started on the process. But until we have a script in place and until we know their schedule and Meryl's schedule, I have no idea when the filming will be done. But I will be a consultant on the film. I can be as involved or non-involved as I'd like. And I think with touring with the book, I probably won't be as involved as I'd like to be, but I will certainly be on set when I can. We've been traveling everywhere, my fiancé and I. That's another wonderful thing that's happened since this book came out, is I'm engaged to be married. Thank you. And he now gets to be my personal assistant and travel companion. So we've had a great time, but we just got back from London and Portugal. London, the book didn't come out until February, and so we were there for a week doing publicity, and happily we came out as number 3 on the New York Times, or the Britain's bestseller list, which is very nice, and we're selling all over the world, so I get emails and snail mail and calls from people all over, most of the time in English, not all the time, but that's been great fun to hear from all the people all over the world. I think that's probably the most satisfying part of writing this book is hearing from people whose lives have been touched by my story and Dewey's story. And it's not just cat lovers. It's single mothers or people who've gone through breast cancer or had a tough time struggling with their lives too and have found new hope through this book or inspiration. That's probably the greatest compliments that we've gotten with the book. I will tell you that I'm hearing from 7 to 9-year-olds, both boys and girls, all the way through people who are 95, and men as much as women. I think that's been very surprising for me, but very rewarding, is that we've touched so many lives, both men and women, with Dewey's story and my story. So that's been extremely satisfying for me. I would like to know what you'd like to talk about. For those of you who read the book, if you've got any questions about my life or Dewey's life, we can go to questions and then I can talk more about what you'd like me to talk about, whether you'd like me to talk about the film or the movie or the book, my life, Dewey's. Yes, go ahead. We'll pass around microphones, so...
My question, and I know you probably thought about this an awful lot, but how are you going to let the cat to play Dewey come into your life?
Say that again?
How are you going to let the cat that's going to play Dewey come into your life?
Oh, I have a feeling that there won't be one cat that plays Dewey. I know in the movie Marley and Me, they used 22 dogs to play Marley. So I have a feeling that this situation will be similar. What I've talked to the movie people about is I think what we're going to have to do is I'm sure we can find orange tabbies who are talented at one skill or the other, but I think we're going to have to use animation to get Dewey's eyes correct because that's where his magic was in his eyes. If you ever met Dewey, you would know that. So I think that's what we'll work with. And in case you didn't know, also, we have a new kitten at home. actually, it was similar to Dewey's story in that it was a tiny little kitten, 15 below zero. The cat was out in the road, almost got hit by a truck, was covered with ice and snow chunks. And a friend of mine stopped and picked him up, took him home, gave him a bath, and her husband said, "No, you cannot keep him. You already have five cats." And he looked so much like Dewey when Dewey was little that she actually took him to the library to see if they would adopt him as the library cat. And they have said, no, no more library cats. But they did keep the kitten in the office, knowing that I was coming down there that day. So they kind of surprised me, shall we say, and said, "We have a surprise for you in the office. Go on in." And there was this adorable little orange kitten with green eyes that I fell in love with immediately. So Paige Turner actually lives at our house now. That's his name. He was named by a fan, somebody who found out I had a new kitten and said, "You're turning a new page in your life, and we think that would be a really great name." So Paige Turner is 5 months old and at the cat sitters right now. Yes, I see a question back there. Hang on for the microphone.
For those who haven't read the book yet, can you give us some maybe... I didn't come to hear about the follow-ups. I came to hear about the book, and I hope you won't bore the people from the front part, but maybe some anecdotes that didn't make the book or something like that.
I will certainly share stories of Dewey. I plan to do that anyway, but I thought I would do that as we go around and answer questions because invariably somebody asks me something about Dewey that triggers a story about him, so I will absolutely share some of those with you. Absolutely. Yes, gentleman in the center there.
Thank you. I was very, very touched by Dewey's sensitivity to people with, it seems, special needs. And could you comment on that, observations that you made in addition to those that you you wrote about? Just an incredible sensitivity. We, my wife and I said, this is a pet partner who was in a library.
Yes, yes. Dewey was a remarkable creature. I always said he was more than a cat. He was just an old soul in a cat's body. But he did have an extremely sensitive side, especially to people who were disabled or homeless or had special needs in some other way. And I think that's best illustrated in the book by the story of Crystal. We had 7 handicap classes come in weekly for special story times at the library, and they were both young children up to adults with special needs. And Crystal was about 14, and she had never spoken, looked up, even opened her eyes much at the library. She would go to the story times and the teachers would pick out books for her, but I'd never seen her react in any way other than look down at the floor and sit in her wheelchair. But she had a wooden tray on her wheelchair, and Dewey started jumping up on her tray when she came into the library, and she started reacting, where she would open her eyes and they would shine when he was around, and she would make noises, squeals of delight when he was on her tray. And so one day I actually took Dewey. It was a very cold day, and she had on a red jacket that was partially zipped. And so I took Dewey and stuffed him down in her coat when they were in front of the desk. And he loved cozy, warm places. And so he was in hog heaven, and the squeal that came out of her mouth was amazing. And she looked up with these shining, beautiful eyes and this great big smile at me. And she was so content that we left them there. All the other kids boarded the bus. The bus driver's reading, and Crystal's still sitting with Dewey in her coat. That was a wonderful thing. But to elaborate on that, I do know that since Dewey's passed, one of the things that's wonderful as I'm going around and touring is I hear stories about Dewey that I never knew about before. One gal came up to me from Iowa, and she said, "I'd like to share a story with you, but I'm afraid I'm going to cry." And I said, "That's okay." And most of the signing people were gone, so I took her around the corner, and she said, "Well, my name's Carol, and my mother used to live in Spencer. And she could never have pets where she was, so she came down to the library every day to visit Dewey." And she lived alone, and so she and Dewey would have a chat every day. And she said when all of us kids came home with the grandkids, we also got taken down to the library to see Dewey every time we came to visit. And so she said he was a big part of my mother's life. But my mother had Alzheimer's, and so she said I had to bring her to my town where I live to put her into a nursing home where I could keep an eye on her. And she said eventually she forgot all of the children and all of the grandchildren, and the only one she could remember was me. And she said I would take my black cat every Friday to visit her. And she said I'd walk in the door and my mother would say, "Oh, Carol, thank goodness you brought Dewey with you." And so she was just a happy camper on Fridays to hold Dewey again and to talk to her daughter. And apparently by the time she passed away, the only two names she could say were Carol and Dewey. So this woman hugged me and thanked me for having such an impact on her mother's life. And I said, "I didn't. It was Dewey. Dewey's magic." So, yes, right here in front.
I have to ask you a painful question about Dewey's end. I mean, did people know? Did he die alone?
No. Dewey was 19 years and 11 days old when he passed away. So he lived a good, long, healthy life. He was over 100 in people years. But although I always knew if he was well or sick or if something was bothering him, he had been treated for hyperthyroidism, which he and I were both diagnosed with in the same month. We had a lot of things in common. But he was doing okay. We had been to the vets in September, and he seemed to be, he was aging and he was failing, but he was doing okay. And then I had planned to be gone for 8 days to a wedding in Florida for my niece. And the day that I left, he went to story hour. He ate scrambled eggs with me. He was fine when I left at noon. But about 10 minutes after I was gone, he started hiding in the closet and acting funny. So one of my staff members called me, and I came right down. I could tell he was in pain. And so I took him to the vet, and they did x-rays, and he had a very large stomach cancer that was pressing on his kidneys and intestines, and there was nothing that could be done at that point. It was very aggressive. So he was actually in my arms when he passed on. I held him, and I told him what was happening, and I thanked him, and all of the staff came from the library to say goodbye. So he was not alone by any means. And we had him cremated, but he was cremated with his fur basket that was heated, and Marty Mouse, his best friend. So, yes, go ahead.
Your book is really shows the centrality of a library to a community. Here in Philadelphia, they're cutting the library budget last year. Maybe you're shaking your head. You know about that.
It happens to all libraries everywhere.
But all the branches and all of that. But your book is so much an explanation not only of how important the cat was, but how important the library was to the people in your town. Now, we have a much bigger town, but can you elaborate on why are libraries such a central thing, not just for book lovers, but a whole community, whether it's Philadelphia or Iowa or wherever?
Yeah. Libraries have always been extremely important in communities. One of the famous sayings that I like very much says something like, libraries are important in times of excess and good economics, but they're vital when economics go down because they're free. I mean, they're not free. You have to remember that everybody pays taxes on libraries, so they're not free. But they don't take cash. They don't take a credit card when you go down there. All the services are available to everyone, no matter who you are. And that's the important thing about libraries. It doesn't matter. It was a lot like Dewey. I see Dewey as a symbol of that. He didn't care if you were black and white, if you were clean or dirty, if you were a banker, or if you were homeless. He loved everybody. And that's the way libraries are. We take from all segments of the population, and there's something for everyone. You don't have to read books. You can use a computer. You can get a tax form. You can have your blood pressure taken. You can go to story hour. You can sit and read the newspaper. It doesn't matter. You can talk to a neighbor. It's that there is one sturdy, open building that you can always count on. I've always felt that libraries were not just a building or a place. They're a state of mind. They're what's left in a community when everything else is gone. Even the smallest towns in Iowa, and when I say small, I mean 100 people maybe, they are so proud that they have a local library. Now, that library may not be that great, but with computers and the kind of databases and things that are available now, it levels the playing field. Those people in those tiny towns have the same access to information as the people in Des Moines, Iowa, in the state capital, as the people in Philadelphia do. It doesn't matter what kind of money you have. You all have the same access. You all have the same chance to learn, to grow. And I think that's what's so important about libraries. But libraries, although they're wonderful, and everybody agrees that they're wonderful, it's like, you know, apple pie and baseball. But that doesn't mean people want to fund them. They just like to have them open. It seems like libraries are always on the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to city funding. When there's cuts, libraries are always first in line. The state of Iowa is going through the same thing right now with the economy. The libraries are being cut. That always happens. People love us, but they love us like apple pie. They don't come out and fight for us so much. And trust me, if the libraries were shut down, they would. But yes, you came for it. And there's always people who stand up for libraries, which is wonderful. But nobody realizes, okay, it's free and you've got a bunch of computers, you don't need any more books. That's not how libraries are run. It always takes funding. And everybody knows that public service takes public funding. You can't have those services without money. It just doesn't happen that way. So it's always important to fight for libraries and to understand their real importance in a community, because that's what they are. Yes.
Hi. I'm a cat owner. I haven't read your book yet, but just bought it today. Mm-hmm. Do you think Dewey has increased awareness of rescue cats, shelter cats, you know, shelter animals in general is a better option than adopting from a pet store, given his story?
Yes.
Do you think I noticed an uptick there?
I do agree with that. And one of the reasons that's happened is because at a lot of my signings and visits around the United States, the local shelters come to my signings and they bring cats for adoption. Now, today the SPCA is out there, but they're not adopting today. You can find out information on the cats. And if you want to stop when you go out there, it's all orange cats today in honor of Dewey. So I've already visited. There's some really wonderful cats in there. You cannot adopt today, but you can get information and go back. They don't want any on-the-spot adoptions that are just spur of the moment. They want people to really consider what they're doing. But at every signing where we've had cats available, we've almost adopted all of them. So I think we really have raised awareness. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's a real important aspect, is that we've worked very closely with rescue leagues, and we're going to continue to do that as we go through this process, is make sure that we stay very closely with adopting cats instead of having them bred or something, but going to a shelter and adopting a cat, because that's the way we found Dewey, and you couldn't do any better than Dewey read more books. So, yes, in the center there with the cap on.
Why do you suppose I assume it was the library board or administration did not want to have a replacement for Dewey in the library?
I think there's a few answers to that. First of all, boards change flavor as they change with members. The boards that I've worked with over the years were all different kinds. I was very happy that I had the board in place that I did when Dewey came along, because they were very open, and I was very young and excited, and they kind of just said, Vicki, go for it, you know. Open your wings and fly. They were ready to go with just about anything I suggested, which was great for a new director. because I had so many ideas I wanted to try. So they were very supportive. The board that's around right now, first of all, there's not many on there that are cat lovers or even cat likers. But it's a whole different kind of board. They have a different feel to them, which is one of the other reasons I think I was ready to retire. They just have a different direction they want to go in. I do agree with them on one point. I do think that no matter what cat they would have taken in, it wouldn't have been the same. There is no replacing Dewey. And I think that any kitten who came into that atmosphere would have a hard time playing second fiddle to Dewey's memory. That would be very hard to live up to. And we still have people coming from all over the United States, even though Dewey's gone, coming every week to the library to see where Dewey lived, to take pictures. I have to tell you, my fans are very enthusiastic. I was in Oskaloosa the other night before we came here, which is across the state from Spencer in Iowa. And I had a couple there from Riverside, California, who flew out to hear me speak and to get their book signed. And it was either coming there or coming to Philadelphia. And they were driving to Spencer the next day to take pictures at the library and to see Dewey's statue and his memorial and so on. So there are still people coming all the time to, as one person wrote, to see where the legend lived. So that's been quite enjoyable. I mean, it happened all of Dewey's life, and it's still continuing to happen. So as we say, Dewey's magic continues. Yes, down in front here.
Hi. I was wondering if in writing Dewey's book, if it's helped you, as well as the town of Spencer, cope with Dewey's loss?
It did. It really did. It was very cathartic for me, especially talking about his passing, which I hadn't done much since he had gone. That was very hard on me, and I had just never really talked about it. But after going over it with Brett 5-6 times, it got much easier to where I can talk about it now a little more easily. But I found the whole process of going over my entire life was very cathartic and put me in a different place than I had been. I mean, I've always had a wonderful life, and I've always been very fulfilled. And as Brett said, the one thing we didn't want to do is write the book as an old stereotype librarian who was lonely and had no life and a million cats around. That was one thing I really wanted to stay away from. The other thing is we wanted to get away from the stereotype of Iowa, you know, that we don't all wear bib overalls and suck on straw all day, that there are a few smart people in Iowa. So that was very important. Plus, the image of libraries was important to me. So all of those played into the story along with Dewey's story. So it was very rewarding to write the whole book and to look back on my life that way a little bit. So who else has a question?
Did you ever actually find out who dropped Dewey down the box? I know in this book you had mentioned.
No,
11
we didn't.
People.
We didn't, but that's an interesting story too, because as Dewey started to get famous, and his fame spread mostly by word of mouth, people would come and visit him. And the only thing I can say about Dewey is that he wasn't like other cats where you go and you say, oh, that's a really cute cat, and then you go home and forget about it. No one ever forgot about Dewey. They would tell other people who would come to see him, and then they would tell other people, or they would write an article about him. And suddenly we would get a newspaper clipping that there was another story about Dewey that we didn't know about. So this happened all the time. And as he started to get famous, I had about 5 people say to me that either their brother or their cousin or their next-door neighbor threw Dewey in the book drop to hurt him, actually, as something mean. But as Dewey's fame grew, and he was on Paul Harvey's Rest of the Story, and he was in 22 national magazines, and Japanese public television flew over from Tokyo, then I had 11 people who swore to me on their lives that they themselves put Dewey in there that night to save him. So Brett and I were trying to imagine what that would look like in an alley at 15 below zero on the north side of the library, 2 o'clock in the morning. You got 11 people back there and one little newborn kitten that keeps getting thrown in this hole. I'm not quite sure how that worked, but we'll never know for sure, and that's okay. You know, it was Dewey's magic night and mine too, so yes.
I came because my friend in Virginia said you must go see this Dewey lady because she's her last three phone calls have all been about how great your story is and how much I must read it. I must confess, I'm a cat liker but not a lover because I'm keenly allergic to the dander, and I'm a visiting nurse. I go into people's houses, and I went into one stop recently where I was leaning over to take the lady's blood pressure, and the cat jumped from the floor to my back and stayed there. For the time I took the blood pressure. I'm wondering, I'm a dog person myself, because I find dogs personally more responsive when you can keep control them more on your kitchen counter. What makes the difference between a dog versus a cat person? I mean, I love Marley. I read his book. I'm not going to see the movie because the book was unbelievable. And with yours, I'm sure your prose is prosaic. I don't want to see the movie yet, but I adore Meryl Streep, so now I'm torn. So, you know, what's the difference between a dog versus a cat lover? And I know Dewey walked into your life, but I'm just curious more about dogs and cats.
Yes. Well, I've had dogs in my life, too, and I love both. But I think people who love dogs and haven't had cats around have a misconception. And because most cats are kind of standoffish and aloof and don't follow orders and get on the kitchen counter, but you'd be surprised at what you can do with training. I mean, I've never had a cat who was allowed on the kitchen counter or the kitchen table for that matter. My dad, on the other hand, has Max the second, and Max is terribly spoiled, and Max sits on the table with him while my dad's eating. But that's my father. When Max comes to my house, he knows that he's not allowed on the table or the counter, and he never goes there. So cats are different, dogs are different. I don't think it's the breed so much as it is the training and the type of personality. I think every animal has a different personality, and I don't think you can lump dogs together or cats together. Well, mostly it depends on the intelligence of the cat and how much they're willing to work with you. Dewey was extremely easy to train. Other cats are a little harder. Paige Turner is a little harder. But with Paige Turner, it takes a lot of saying no, of using a firm voice, and what we've used with him is a finger snap. So he knows when he hears that I mean business, that I'm not playing around, we're not, you know, playing. And that's got him to mostly stay off the kitchen table. He's still try and sneak a paw up there, but if I say no, he gets right down. So he's only 5 months old. It takes a lot of training. Now with Dewey, he was extremely easy to train, except for going out in the lobby when he was a teenager, because he wanted to escape. I'll get to you in a minute. I'll share that story. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's what you have to do. You have to use good training techniques, you know, whether you're working with a horse or a squirrel or a dog or a cat or whatever it is. And you have to be the leader. That's the important part. You have to be the alpha dog or the alpha cat or whatever. And as long as they understand that, they're pretty good about it. Now, Dewey was amazingly smart. For those of you who haven't read the book, I don't believe this either. Trust me, I've never believed in ESP or any of those things, but Dewey could not only understand English, and I had to spell the word bath and scissors and vet, towel, all those kinds of things. I'm not kidding. If I said those words, when he was standing there, he would hide from me for like 2 hours. Not from the public and not from the other staff members, just from me. So I had to be extremely careful. And as Dewey got older, it wasn't spelling them anymore. That didn't even work. It was when I thought of them. And I know that sounds bizarre. It sounded bizarre to me. But I'm not kidding. If I was doing a craft project and I was using scissors to cut up something, he was fine. But the minute I thought, oh, he's got a couple of knots I should cut out, he was gone and I couldn't find him for 2 hours. And it got so bad that by the time he was an adult, if he had a veterinary appointment, I couldn't think about it. I would literally, 2 days ahead of time, have to tell another staff member when the appointment was, and then I would sneak out of the library, get in my car, come around to the back door, and have them capture him, because I couldn't touch him. For days, I couldn't touch him, because he knew what was coming. The other thing that was funny is when we got in the car on the way home, he was totally different. Instead of hiding and being scared, he would stand with his feet on the dashboard and stare out the front window like this, because he knew he was safe. He knew he was either going back to the library or he was going to my house. And so he was perfectly content to just be, you know, a casual observer of the town. And the minute we got within a block of the library, he knew it. He could smell the restaurant next door, the cafe. And he would get so excited, he would literally jump up and down on the seat. And when I opened the door, he would fly into my arms, and I'd take him into the library, and he'd leap out of my arms, and it was like, ah, I'm home. He was the smartest cat I'd ever met in my entire life, and I'm not kidding. He could read my face, my body language. He always knew what was going on with me, and most people. He was very sensitive. So, anybody else got a question? Yes.
I wanted to thank you for a wonderful book. I'm a library director out here at American College in Bryn Mawr. We just got done National Library Week and discussed your book, Men and Women, and well-received. We also saw the movie called Puss in Books.
Oh, yes.
And I wanted to ask you whether you keep in touch with any of the other libraries that have library cats. They talked a lot in that film about Baker and Taylor, and I know I think Baker had passed on.
Baker and Taylor both passed away. Okay. In about 2005. For those of you who don't know, they were in Arizona. Baker and Taylor were two fold cats who had the folded down ears that lived at a library there. And the reason they're named Baker and Taylor is Baker and Taylor is the biggest book distributor to libraries in the world. It's a company. And they now use Baker and Taylor's picture on all of their advertising. So all of their bags and their flyers and everything have these two cats on the front cover. Puss in Books was a documentary on library cats that was done back in about 1999, I think, by Gary Roma. He's from Boston. He's a videographer and a documentarian and a comedian. So his first video was on doorstops, and his second one was on library cats. So he was kind of doing it tongue-in-cheek, but he actually went around the country and visited about 8 libraries with cats. The cool thing was most of the cats that he met were typical cats who either went to sleep or turned their back or walked away. He had a lot of film of the backside of cats and tails. He was very pleased when he came to Spencer because Dewey was a camera ham. He always knew when there was a camera out, and he would do all of his cute stuff. And so Gary had planned on being there about 2 hours. He ended up staying for 8 hours and filming and filming and filming because Dewey did everything that he wanted. And so Dewey became his favorite library cat in the world. And when he went back to Boston, every time he would get a call about a library cat, he would pass them on to me. So Gary Roma actually helped spread Dewey's name throughout the country and the world. Because he always referred them to me. I was always good for an interview, or Dewey was always good for a story. So that's his favorite library cat of all time. So I still stay in touch with Gary. I don't stay in touch too much with the other librarians. We all belong to the National Library Cat Society when our cats were alive. But the cats have changed a lot since then. If you want to, you can go on Gary Roma's website, which is called ironfrog.com, and you can actually look at a library cat map that has all the library cats in the United States. Now, it's not updated all the time. It's ironcat.com, ironfrog.com. Thank you. I'll also give you a couple other websites. If you go to deweyreadmorebooks.com, that's Dewey's official website, you can actually see video of him riding on the library carts, waving at the front door in the morning, playing with catnip, a couple of his birthday parties over the years. quite a bit of film of him. You can also read more about B, get a copy of my schedule, my tour schedule, and where we'll be next. You can also go to spencerlibrary.com and see candid photos of Dewey at work and take a virtual tour of the library. You can also see Dewey's statue. Just recently, a library patron in Spencer commissioned an artist in California, or Arizona, to do a bronze sculpture of Dewey. Her name is Heather Berry. She lives in Prescott, Arizona, but her studio, her clay studio and bronze studio, is in Dewey, Arizona, which was very cool. Another one of those coincidences of Dewey's magic. She did a 45-pound bronze sculpture of Dewey that is absolutely gorgeous. It's now in the Spencer Library. It's a picture of him, or a sculpture of him, lying down on about three books. The top book is his, and it's open to the first chapter. He's also on the books with Marty Mouse and his Red Ball of Yarn. And it's absolutely beautiful, absolutely breathtaking. I love what she did with Dewey's eyes. She's also talking about possibly doing small clay sculptures in the future of Dewey and selling those. So if you keep watch on the Dewey Read More Books site, I'll let you know if that happens. But there's lots of magical things that have happened with Dewey. Does anybody else have a question? How are we doing for time here? We've got about 15 minutes yet. Yes. The rubber bands? Yes. Dewey was totally addicted to rubber bands. I don't know what it was. I think he had a thing for plastic. I'm not sure. But rubber bands were, especially when he was young, his major addiction. I'm not kidding. We had to cleanse the library of rubber bands. First we tried putting them in boxes and cups, and then we found we had to put them in drawers because no matter where they were, he could find them. He kind of grew out of it as he aged, but not completely. It's just that we got better at hiding them. My favorite was when he was about 5 years old and we had pretty much taken all the rubber bands out of the library. If a patron wanted one, they had to ask for one at the front desk because they were under lock and key, basically. But I was walking back to my office, and Dewey was in the supply closets. And these were floor-to-ceiling closets along one whole wall that had all of our supplies in them. And he loved getting on those shelves and exploring one at a time. And then he'd have to come out to climb up onto the next one. And how he did that, I don't know, but he did. And I was going by there, and I just happened to glance to the side, and I saw him sitting there, and I kind of did a double take, and there's Dewey sitting with a rubber band that's bright blue. It's a half an inch wide. It's probably 8 inches long. He has it hanging out of his mouth, and it's actually drooping on the shelf. It's that big, and he's got this giant grin on his face, like, I have just made the biggest coup in the world. So I said, wait right there, I'm going to get my camera. And by the time I turned around and came back, he was gone. So it was a rubber band. But yes, he was crazy for rubber bands. And that addiction was never replaced with another one. Like I said, we kind of held it under control, but not very well. We had to keep them under house arrest to have any rubber bands around to use. Yes. How is my daughter? My daughter Jody is in the book. She's my only child. She's now married. She's a special ed teacher. She works with high school special needs students in Omaha, Nebraska. And she has 4.5-year-old twins, Hannah and Nathan, who are the joy of my life. And she just had a baby boy in December. So we have baby Ryan, who's our new little bundle. And he's about 4 months old now. He's adorable, of course. And Hannah and Nathan remember Dewey, and they've seen pictures of Dewey all their life because Jody was also very close with Dewey, so they love him. I'll also let you know that in September we're publishing our first Dewey children's book. It's a paper book coming out called Dewey, There's a Cat in the Library, and Hannah and Nathan will be in the book. So We had to name it that because what you don't know is when we first got Dewey, and probably for the next 5 years, about every 5 minutes we would hear, excuse me, ma'am, did you know there's a cat in the library? Yes, we know. And we would have to tell the story all over again, and then people would come in and say, oh, I just flew in from Maine. I had to come see Dewey. I've heard so much about him. He's so famous. And right behind him would be somebody else saying, did you know there's a cat in the library? It was one or the other all of his life. It was very strange, but that happened for years. So anybody else have a question? Yes.
This is merely a comment. In reading the book, you know, the tears and the laughter and all of that, but mm-hmm. about halfway through I decided, this cat is my cat. Mm-hmm. It's so well written, and just a compliment to you and,
thank you
and the quality of your writing.
Thank you very much. It was a joy to write, and hopefully there'll be another one. We're not sure yet, but in the meantime, we're doing the first picture book, and a young adult version of Dewey is coming out, and there will be a Christmas book for children, not this Christmas, but next year. So there's a lot to come with Dewey. Read more books. He's not gone yet. So thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you for the questions.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.